It's time now for Super Psychologist, Dr. Mara Karpel, and your golden years.
Good evening and welcome to Dr. Mara Karpel and your golden years. This evening and every Sunday evening at 5 p.m. Central Time and at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on blogtalkradio.com and on drmarakarpel.com. And today is Sunday, March the 11th, and we are back in beautiful Austin, Texas, in our Austin studio. We're right in the middle of South by Southwest. You might hear some drum beats in the background. There's music coming from all sides outside the window. But we're here doing the program, and Art Mendoza, the Compost Entertainment producer of the show, is with us to make it run smoothly. And we have another packed program in store for you this evening. In a little while, after the break, we'll be joined from right here in the studio by educator, lecturer at the University of Texas at San Antonio, and author Josh Beach. And Josh has written several books and will be joining us to talk about his latest book, How Do You Know?, which is a look at how today's citizens need to be able to understand how to evaluate knowledge, debate knowledge, productively use it in both personal decisions and public policy. This is really important in this day and age, so I think this will be a really interesting discussion. In fact, I know it'll be a really interesting discussion. And then later in the program, Brandon Taylor, musician, will be joining us from along his journey in performing. I don't know where he's calling from, and he'll be sharing his musical history with us, and we'll be playing some of his original music. Also, Laura Gelizunis will report in from the retirement community, Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, tell us what the retirees are up to. And along the way, I will talk about compassion in healthcare for the elderly, which is as important or in some ways more important than actual medicine. So we have a packed show, as I said. And throughout this evening's program, we will have time to take your questions. So if you have any questions for me or for my guests, please feel free to give a call. The toll-free number is 855-345-4720. That's 855-345-4720. Or you can email your questions to me, and I will read them on the air to my guests. And my email address is Dr. Mara, that's D-R-M-A-R-A, at drmarakarpel.com, drmarakarpel.com. And be sure to get your questions to me while the guests are still with us so they can answer your questions. And if you want to hear this evening's program again, you can do that by going to my website, drmarakarpel.com, and the link to the podcast will be posted later along with all of the website links that my guests speak about on the program. And you can also hear the podcast in as soon as 5 minutes after the show ends by going directly to Blog Talk Radio, that's blogtalkradio.com/your golden years. And for information from previous programs, to listen to previous programs and get all of the website links from those, to read my blog, to get my tips for caregivers, read my blogs in thriveglobal.com and in huffingtonpost.com. Watch the videos. By the way, we are going to be videotaping this interview, which will be posted later on YouTube, and all of the interviews that have been live in the office since 2016 are uploaded to YouTube and are on my website. So you can see all of those at my website. Go to my website for all of that, drmarakarpel.com. And you can also listen to all of the previous podcasts that we have done here with Blog Talk Radio by going to blogtalkradio.com/yourgoldenyears. And for the latest information, to know what's coming up next, what guests are coming up on the radio program, any blogs that I have posted, which those are posted about once a month, my caregiver tips, all of that, anything new. I have a new free meditation download on my website, but you can get all of that on my Facebook page, Dr. Mara Karpel, Your Golden Years, and also the latest on my upcoming book coming out this year by going to my Facebook page called The Passionate Life by Dr. Mara Karpel. All right. So if this is the first time that you're tuning in, I'm a licensed psychologist from New York City practicing here in Austin, Texas, and the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. And I work with adults of all ages and have a specialty of working with seniors and with caregivers, and for the past few years have also been evaluating veterans for PTS time. My office is in the wonderful Veterans Resource Center, Heroes Night Out, which is located in Cedar Park, Texas. And for information about this really great resource for veterans and for veterans' families, check out their website, heroesnightout.org. Do you want to contact me about anything? Do you have a question or some information that you feel that I should know about? Send me an email to Dr. Mara at drmarakarpel.com. Go through my website or give me a call at 512-626-6973. This evening's program is produced by Accomplice Entertainment, Postal Productions, and Psyched Up Productions, and sponsored by Dr. Ronald DeVere, neurologist, memory specialist, and author of the book, Memory Loss, Everything You Want to Know But Forget to Ask. To make an appointment with Dr. DeVere at his memory clinic in Lakeway, Texas, or to purchase a copy of his book, you can call him at 512-261-7909 or send him an email to rdevere, that's R-D-E-V-E-R-E, R-D-E-V-E-R-E, at austin.rr.com. And his book is also available on Amazon. And this evening's program is also sponsored by Storyhouse. Storyhouse gathers your stories and turns them into multimedia collections that can be shared now and for generations to come. Have Storyhouse over to conduct a private interview in your home or invite them to your next big event or family reunion. Storyhouse, where your memories live. Find out more at yourstoryhouse.com or call 512-296-8752. Okay, so we're going to take a brief break. We're going to play a few of the commercials from our sponsors. And when we come back, Josh Beach will be right here in the studio to talk about how do you know. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Go.
Super psychologist Dr. Mara Karpel will be back after words from our sponsors.
Worry about memory loss? Dr. Ronald DeVere, certified neurologist and director of Alzheimer's disease and memory disorders in Lakeway, has been helping those with dementia and memory loss for over 12 years, specializing in the diagnosis, treatment, and counseling of those with memory loss and dementia. Dr. DeVere also has a book to reduce your worry and fear by knowing the facts. Memory Loss, Everything You Want to Know But Forget to Ask, available now on Amazon.com. Dr. Ronald DeVere, Alzheimer's Disease and Memory Disorders Center in Lakeway, and his book, Memory Loss, Everything You Want to Know But Forget to Ask. For more information or to schedule an appointment, call 512-261-7909.
Are you or a loved one a Medicare beneficiary? Help save you and Medicare money by stopping Medicare fraud. Fraud happens when Medicare is billed for services or supplies you never receive. There are three easy things you can do to fight fraud. Review your Medicare claims for accuracy, protect your personal information, and be on the lookout for suspicious activity. For more information or to report fraud, call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE or your local SHIP counselor at the Area Agency on Aging at 1-800-252-9240.
All right, and welcome to Dr. Mara Karpel and your golden years. And right here in the studio with me is educator, lecturer, author, Josh Beach.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So, Josh, I've read your book, How Do You Know? And there's a lot in it.
Yes. It's a big book in a small space.
And we were talking about this before the program, all the different points in that book that are just so timely these days.
Right.
Before we get to talk about that, though, I want to ask you a little bit about your history. How you came to be where you are now.
It's another long story. In many ways, I grew up in a small town, more kind of focused on social life and figuring out, you know, what I wanted to do with my life, kind of lower class background. For me, education was kind of a way out of that small town and those limited choices and opened up a world for me that I didn't really knew existed. And I was kind of flashing about, you know, kind of wondering what to do with my life in college. I almost got kicked out of college with bad grades and partying too much and
right.
You know, kind of being distracted by all the snares that the world has to offer.
Yeah.
But I remember the power of books that I had as a young person. And once I kind of got back into reading books and taking classes where it was about knowledge and about how this could help me and what life had to offer and kind of getting engaged in big questions, for me, that kind of just sent me off on a path of just, you know, wanting to learn and know as much as I could about the world. And just, I haven't stopped since. I spend many hours almost every day reading and thinking mm-hmm. about the world and writing. So I just got very passionate about learning, which led me to become an educator. And as an educator, I've worked with preschool kids all the way up to college students. And often I was working with multiple age groups at the same time where I'd be
uh-huh.
teaching college in the afternoons and teaching preschool kids in the mornings.
Wow,
and some of those kids I still have contact with on Facebook
mm-hmm.
and they're adults now with families. And so I just got very passionate, you know, probably about early 20s with
mm-hmm.
wanting to know, wanting to understand how the world works, wanting to understand my place within it, and then trying to use my knowledge and my experience to help other people find
mm-hmm.
their way as well.
Okay. So this book, you've written several books, but this book really struck me, and I was like, I want to talk about that book, because it's so timely.
Yeah.
You know, you talk in the book, which, you know, this is a phrase we've heard, that we live in a post-truth
right.
society.
Right.
So what does that mean? What is that?
Well, I think
mean?
There were, for many years, many decades, and many cultures, there was a sense that truth was knowable and that the community at large kind of had a grasp of what was true, what was false. And what happened certainly accelerated over the course of the 20th century is that there was more exposure to different cultures. More people became engaged in the political process and the educational process, and more people became more aware of these different truths, different ways of living. And that caused a lot of conflict and questioning. And so we live today in a very globalized world. We live in countries and nations that are more aware of their ethnic minorities and their minorities of every stripe and color. And so it's a time where we're confronted with so much difference.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone seems to have their own version of how things should be and what's true and what's false. And you have competing political parties and groups kind of wrestling over power and money. And
mm-hmm.
and so within this environment, truth, knowledge has become another pawn in this game to accumulate wealth, accumulate power, political influence to deliver products across the globe in order to accumulate money. So the idea that we can refer to a book, refer to a teacher, refer to a community, and they would be able to safely say, well, this is true. And then everyone would be able to defer to that knowledge. And we could just say, okay, and then live our lives according to that confirmation. It's not like that anymore. We have so many vocalized versions of truth in media, on TV, on the radio, in books that we read, people on the street,
mm-hmm.
our friends and family. There's just no consensus anymore about anything, really.
Right.
And so people are confronted, who do I believe? What is true? How do I know if something is true or false? And I think more than ever, people feel this confusion and this need, what do I do?
Mm-hmm.
And so the book is trying to address, what do you do?
Right. You know, I think one of the things that strikes me is a lot of people use this expression, well, this is my truth.
Right.
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 So, and people have come to the point where they feel like their opinion or their feeling
right.
are the truth.
Right.
You know, my truth would be my truth for me, like how I live my life. But that doesn't apply for everybody. I mean, there's my truth and there's the truth. Like
right.
gravity is a true law, whether you believe it or you don't.
Right, right.
If you can't jump out of a building and say, well, I
but
don't
even,
believe
even
in gravity.
Even the roundness of the earth and gravity are still are being questioned, you know, very confidently in very public spaces by people.
Right.
And even those certainties that we think that gravity, you know, the earth is round, even those are being questioned. And so, I mean, there's just really no consensus anymore. But yeah, the book kind of spends a whole chapter. And in many ways, when people say, this is my truth, they're entirely accurate, that we all have our own truth. And we all live our lives by what we consider to be true or false. So William James, one of the early psychologists, famously said that it doesn't matter so much if something is true. What matters is how we believe it is true. And
right.
as a psychologist, he said we need to kind of treat people's truths as if they were true and to see what the results are. And so I think for people, they do live in their own realities and are both celebrated artists and novelists and filmmakers and musicians. They make their money and get their fame by broadcasting their truth and their reality, which in many ways they are able to explain and to show us in very powerful forms. And to a certain extent, we're either confronted, we need to make our own reality and live according to our own life, or we adopt someone else's. And so you have gurus, you have religions that are focused on some person that says, this is the truth, this is the way, this is the life. And then people adopt that guru's, you know, entire habit of being and eating and dressing and walking and talking and mission. And so, you know, we adopt our parents or our friends or our politicians or religious leaders. We live their lives their way. And then we just kind of adopt whatever they tell us to adopt.
Right.
And so for people, it kind of boils down to, I'm going to strike off on my own, which is a very frightening proposition, but some people do that. And others, it's, I'm going to adopt my community and then I'm going to live their life. What few people ever dare to ask is, what is objectively true? What is the best way to live or to do? That just doesn't occur to most people.
So how do you find out what is objectively true?
Yeah. Well, in a word, it boils down to science.
Mm-hmm.
And that is kind of the focus of the book. Science is something that many people consider to be magic. It's not well understood. I think more people have an idea about what science is. More people practice science now than ever before. But for most human beings on this planet, science is still a new version of priestcraft. It is just a bunch of strange people dressing in strange clothes, doing strange ritualized activities behind closed doors. And then these magical products arise out of their, you know, machinations, cell phones where we can talk to anyone across
right.
the world for very little money and have, you know, the entire history of the world, video, audio, print, in the palm of our hands. How is that possible? Right?
Mm-hmm.
But science is not just creating technology. Science is a very precise method, steps to arrive at what is true or false. It's very difficult. It's very time consuming. And it's not a perfect process.
Right.
And the hallmark of science, as I focus off in the book, is the scientific community, where people question each other's truths. Why did you do this? Why did you arrive at that conclusion? What steps did you take? What tools did you
mm-hmm.
use? How well did those tools work? What are their flaws? What mistakes did you make? What assumptions did you make? And you're essentially in science taking what you think is true. And you have followed these procedures. You've used these tools. You think you've done something in the best way to arrive at objective truth. But then you say to the community, find all my errors. Find those mistakes
right.
that I made. What didn't I see? What don't I get? And then it usually takes years, sometimes decades, in some cases centuries.
Right.
And gravity. It took us a very, very long time to figure out what gravity. And even when we knew, Newton, you know, kind of established the basic laws of gravity for a couple hundred years. We knew that. That was certain. Done. Move on. That topic is over. Then Einstein comes along and completely upends what we think we know about gravity,
right,
and opens up. And even today, physicists are still wrestling, you know, over gravity and how it might not operate the same at all corners of the universe. And the idea that gravity is curved, and it just these huge, complex ideas that have come about through question, answer, critique.
And I think that's a good point. It's that scientists, in fact, when you do a scientific study, you're not saying this is a fact.
Right.
You're saying this is my hypothesis, and I have not disproved it.
Right.
I haven't said I've proven it true.
Well, and even in the scientific community,
right,
the idea of fact, I think, means something very different than what it means for most people in their everyday language, that
mm-hmm.
people want to consider facts as it's there, it's always going to be this way, done. We don't have to worry about it. Again, I'm just going to memorize that, lock it in the brain, and there it is. But in science, when we say fact, it just means based on the evidence and what we
right.
know right now, this is most likely true. However, the world might change on the spot.
Right.
And we might have made some errors leading up to our conclusions today. And so
right.
pending further, and that's the thing with science, is that we're always looking for more information, more data to confirm what we think we know, and to find those gaps that we can't always see, that we're not always aware of.
So would you say that that applies to everyday life, that we should be questioning everything that we think we
it
know?
It does. It does. And this is the paradox that the book tries to tackle. We do need to think about this very complex world we live in, where we're dealing with politicians and advertisers and big businesses and teachers. And we know there's a lot of corruption. There's a lot of falsehood. There's also a lot of truth, and there's a lot of new possibilities. How do we know? What do we choose? And so we do need to take kind of that scientific process, that scientific doubt and scrutiny into our everyday lives. Should our children be vaccinated? Should my children be learning evolution at school? You know, what cell phone should I buy? What is the best car? Should I even be investing in a car? Our car is going to be obsolete when they, you know, with the robot revolution, and we're going to have robot taxis here in a few years. Should you even be buying cars anymore? Should they be electric or gas? So there's all these questions. At the same time, though, there's just no easy answers, and it's a difficult process to be questioning and to, you know, submit, okay, I've done all this research, now I need to go out to my friends and family, prove me wrong. You know, it's a lot of effort. It's a lot of time. And for most people, for most decisions, they do not want to invest that time and energy
mm-hmm.
to kind of think scientifically. And I think in many ways they shouldn't. You know, it would just lead to a kind of a paradoxically sterile and uncertain and just exhausting life. So there's got to be some kind of balance between what questions do we really investigate and spend more time with, and what areas should we just fall back on? My friends and family say this is the best thing to do. My feelings say this is the best thing to do. In some cases, that's okay. You know,
mm-hmm.
that we shouldn't feel that everything needs to be scrutinized all the time
mm-hmm.
because it would just lead to a
difficult
life, yeah.
But it seems like most people don't spend any time scrutinizing.
Right. Yeah. And so the opposite, the end would be people that just don't think about anything ever.
Right.
And that leads to a lot of problems.
And you mentioned in the book something very interesting, and that this has been scientifically found
mm-hmm.
that people who know the least amount about something have the most confidence
right.
in it, confidence
right.
in their knowledge versus, you know, you said Socrates, you said the more I
know that I know nothing. Yeah,
you know
yeah,
that I know
yeah.
nothing. So the more that
wisest
I...
Wisest man in Athens. That
yeah,
was the only thing he knew for
right.
certain.
So, and the more that you know, the more questions that you have.
Right.
Whereas if you don't know very much, you think you know everything.
Right. And I think that's one of the hallmarks of science, is that scientists spend an immense amount of time being trained in their specific tools and methodology and they have an immense amount of knowledge. Same time, they also know all the gaps and choices and uncertainties along the way. They're very aware of all the flaws in their brain, in the brains of their colleagues, in the incompleteness of the data, in the multiple interpretations. And I think the more you really understand the complexity of the world and how it's changing every day, every decade, that we live in a new world, in a sense, that there's just not a lot of room for confidence, of complete certainty. that we need a certain amount of humility, that we can't know everything, and that we're dependent on other people to help us know more completely. And so those people that are the most certain, I know this for a fact, I'm never going to change my mind, it often boils down to this leap of faith rather than actual knowledge, that they haven't actually done anything to earn that confidence. They've just made this gut decision. I know I'm done, move on.
And in some situations that work for your own life, right?
But right. I mean, sometimes you
leap
just
of faith into, I'm going to do this and I know I'm going to be successful, and that's
right.
But that's different than taking a leap of faith in something like public policy. Or
right. And even in your life, you know, when you choose a stock, you choose a mate, you choose a major, you know, you choose a product off the shelf at the grocery store. If you make a choice that turns out to be a positive choice and that you really don't have regrets, well, then you don't have to question the certainty that you had. But what happens when you make a mistake? Do you stick with that mate that turns out to be not an optimal mate?
Right.
Do you stick with that soap that's giving your skin, you know, dryness and itchiness? Do you stick with that major that you can't handle all the math that's required? I mean, and so when you realize that you made this choice, you were certain at the time, but now it doesn't seem to be working out, that's where you need to go and bring that critical scrutiny. Maybe I didn't make the best choice. Maybe I didn't fully understand my options. Maybe this isn't what I thought it was. That's where we need to change our minds, where we need to be flexible and look at the data.
That's the word, flexibility,
right?
Being open.
Being open to the world and to experience.
To not being set that this is, I'm right, and
right.
Everybody else is wrong.
And just to kind of take the
right.
pulse, you know, how is the relationship doing? How
mm-hmm.
is this soap that I'm using doing? How am I doing in my classes or my relationship with my friends and my family? How is work, you know, that we need to kind of think about and look at the evidence, look at how our colleagues or our loved ones, you know, see us and interact with us and say, is this what I wanted?
Right.
Is this what I expected? Could I be doing better? Do I want more? And when we recognize that there are problems that need to be addressed, that's where we need real tools to make, you know, a decision. Okay, I'm not happy. This job is not working, or this marriage is not working. You don't want to make another gut decision, because then you're going to jump from one fire into the next.
Mm-hmm.
You need to think, okay, what went wrong here with that last decision? Where am I at? What do I need to do differently? And then make a more informed decision
right.
using a better critical thought process, hopefully kind of looking for evidence, okay? Failed marriages, these are some of the common causes. I see that happened in my life. You know, failed majors leading to dead-end careers. Okay, I see where I did that in my life. And then you're using that information and that critical scrutiny to kind of avoid those errors in the future.
Right, which is what I do in my job, helping
right.
people to do that,
right?
So I failed at this relationship, I failed at that relationship, I failed at that relationship. Well, what's the common denominator here?
Right.
Me.
Uh-huh.
So now let's look at your behavior and maybe what caused that. Was it poor choice?
Right.
Or was it your behavior? You know.
And
so,
sometimes it is your frame of mind, you know,
mm-hmm.
that cognitive therapy, you need to sometimes train people to see themselves and their feelings differently, to
right.
feel differently and to interpret those feelings differently. So sometimes, you know, those gut instincts and those intuitive decisions can be there and be positive, but we need to have the right frame of mind to experience them as positive and
right.
recognize them as positive. And sometimes going in with a positive attitude can affect that objective reality.
Right. Well, there's so much to talk about. We're running out of time. But that one point where even being able to look at your thoughts.
Right.
Thinking about your thinking.
Right. Metacognition.
Yes. Very important. In the 1 minute we have left, how can people get your book if they're interested in reading that book or some of your other books?
Well, the easiest place, you could go to my website, jmbeach.com. It's on Amazon and other major booksellers.
And it's spelled like beach, like going to the beach.
The beach, going to the beach, yeah,
right.
B-E-A-C-H, yeah,
mm-hmm.
just like going to the beach. So jmbeach.com or jmbeach on Amazon or any other bookseller, you could find the book there. You could email me, and I'd be happy to give you a copy for free. I have a PDF version. The publisher that I'm working with is an academic publisher, so it's in a hard copy. It's really expensive right now. That's kind of meant for academic libraries.
Right.
There's going to be a cheaper paper copy coming soon,
okay.
Probably the next year, you know, within the next year. So I would caution against buying the expensive hardbound copy right now. And if you really wanted access to it, I'd be happy to provide you one for free.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yep.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much for coming on the program.
No problem.
We'll have
thank
to have you
me.
Back because there's just so much to talk about. 20 minutes isn't enough.
Right, right.
All right. Next time.
Okay.
All right. Well, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Are you or a loved one a Medicare beneficiary? Help save you and Medicare money by stopping Medicare fraud. Fraud happens when Medicare is billed for services or supplies you never receive. There are three easy things you can do to fight fraud. Review your Medicare claims for accuracy, protect your personal information, and be on the lookout for suspicious activity. For more information or to report fraud, call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE or your local SHIP counselor at the Area Agency on Aging at 1-800-252-9240.
I almost spoke all the words that I wanted to say. I almost saw what you look like, bless your wall. But almost doesn't count anymore. And a sure thing never will. You almost felt all the things that I dream about, and you almost heard all the songs that I sing out loud. But almost doesn't count anymore.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Carpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Carpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show.
All right, a little technical glitch. If you're just tuning in, this is Dr. Mara Carpel in your golden years on blogtalkradio.com and on drmaracarpel.com. And that was a very interesting discussion, and we'll have to have Josh Beach back on the program so we can continue with that, because really important to be able to figure out what we know and what we think we know that really isn't true. And I think the main point there is questioning. Question, question, question. All right. So before we have Laura Gelozunis call in from Puerto Vallarta, I want to talk about the topic of compassion. And before I even get to that, let me fill you in on some news. So as I mentioned before the interview, that we were videotaping that interview with Josh Beach, and that will be edited and then uploaded to YouTube, and then that will also be on my website once that's done. So it's always fun to actually watch the interview. I think you get a little bit extra out of it. Of course, it's great when my, you know, the interviews are great even when my guests are out of town via. There's a little added something that you can see the interview. Also, my latest blog, the last time I was on, I didn't think that the blog would make it in by the end of February. And so I said, since I had skipped February, you'd have two in March. But in fact, it's squeaked in right on the last day. They published on February 28th, they published my latest blog. And that blog is Based on the weekly series that I have, Tips for Caregivers Near and Far, I picked five of the top five of the tips with a little extra in there. So you can take a look at that. That's in Thrive Global. ThriveGlobal.com, and it's on my website under publications. And there will be another blog coming out very soon for the month of March. And also there'll be since last week they had published my five tips for caregivers, I skipped the week in coming up with a tip for caregivers, just so much that people can read. So there will be another tip for caregivers posted tonight. So it's my tips for caregivers near and far. And another new piece of news is that I have created a guided meditation to find your inner peace, joy, and vitality. And if you want to hear me guide you through the meditation, you can do that for free. You can download that for free from my website. So just go to drmaricarpel.com and to sign up to get it to come, the download to come through your email, it will pop up, or you can look for the page, Free Meditation. And I have posted it as well on Facebook and all my social media, so you can look for it there. And let me know what you think. And let's see, any other news? I think that's it. Stay tuned for more information about my book. It will be published this year. We're working on getting that out, so there's news in that front. And you can find out any of the latest news, upcoming shows. We have a lot of, we always have great guests, but I've been booking up through March, April, into May. And so stay tuned, because we have some really great guests coming up. And let's see, anything else? I think that's it. So again, go to my website, you'll find out more. Go to my Facebook pages and you will find out more. Okay, so I'm working on a blog right now, and I wanted to talk a little bit about it, even though it's not complete, it's not published yet. It's about compassion and the power of compassion in healthcare, especially, well, really for anyone who is sick, who really needs a little extra loving care. But, you know, I found that for elderly people in my professional work, as well as in personally witnessing the treatment of my parents, you know, sometimes the compassion is missing. And I started writing about my experience with my own dad during the time that he was very sick, right before he passed almost 3 years ago. And I was thinking that I really wanted to write about it and write about how difficult it was and how a lot of the suffering that went on during those last 4 months could have been avoided had the healthcare system be more compassionate. So maybe, you know, his illness couldn't have been avoided. Maybe his death couldn't have been avoided, but the suffering along the way could have in many ways been decreased if he had met with more compassionate healthcare. And certainly I know that the suffering of myself and the rest of our family would have been decreased. So I started writing this. I started writing it soon after he passed away, but it was much too raw at that point, you know, much too difficult to write. So I kept putting it down. And then a couple of weeks ago, I started thinking about it again, and it just kind of all came to me, that what I wanted to write and how, you know, what I wanted to say. And I started writing it and then started feeling like, you know, why am I writing? I started questioning it. Why am I writing this? What's the benefit? Because I always, you know, try to write positive blogs, or at least work things out through the blog in a way that people can come to a positive conclusion about how to deal with it. And I wasn't feeling that in writing this. So I kept questioning it. And, you know, I've had the author and grief therapist Megan Devine on my program twice, but once when I found her website, Refuge in Grief, and I really, really appreciated her blogs about coping with grief and talking about her own situation with loss and grief. And then I had her on again when she published the book, It's Okay That You're Not Okay. And so I'm on her mailing list. And as I, you know, put aside writing and got on the email, another newsletter from her popped up. And the newsletter, in the newsletter, she was advertising the start of another program she was doing for people called Writing Your Grief, and recommending that people, you know, start to write their grief. And in a group, she has a group where other people are supportive. It's kind of like a support group. Everybody in there is writing their grief. And I said, this is why I'm writing this, because this is going to help me. Just writing this story is writing my grief, and it's going to help me. So I went back to writing about the situation. And then I started questioning it again. And I started asking myself, well, is this really helping other people, or am I just writing it for myself? Maybe I just need to write it and keep it private and not post it as a blog. What's the point of posting it as a blog? And then I remembered that in some of my blogs, I had started with a problem that I was dealing with myself, and as I wrote it, the answers came to me about how to deal with it, and that came out in the blog. And so I told myself, well, just keep writing, and the answers about how to deal with it and what positive you can transmit to people or suggestions will come out as you're writing. So I kept going just with that, you know, trust that eventually it would turn around to something that would lead to a message, some positive message put out there. And then I put it aside for a while and read another chapter in the book by an author who's going to be on the show in a few weeks, Naomi Levy, who wrote a book called Einstein and the Rabbi. And when I opened the book and started reading the chapter that I was up to, it was exactly what I was, the message. And what she wrote was, our delusion of separateness often leads us to an unfounded sense of superiority and invulnerability that makes us indifferent to human suffering. And it kind of hit me, because that was what I was feeling, that the healthcare practitioners were feeling, that they were indifferent. And what she says is, we delude ourselves that we are separate from others because we don't want to feel vulnerable and small. But our denial makes us small. Pain, distance, and callousness. We have the power to respond to suffering with soul. We have the power to step forward in our lives and into the lives of others with heart and compassion. And that was the message that I felt was really the point of writing this. She had been writing about how she was on her way home from school one day and saw way in the distance that somebody's car was on fire, and there was this poor man standing there unable to do anything to put out the fire. And she really felt pity for him, that, oh, poor guy, I'm so glad that that's not our car and that's not my father. And then when she got closer, she realized that it was, in fact, her family car, and that poor man was her father. And when she came over, her father said, don't worry about it. Nobody was hurt. That's the main thing. But what she had really felt worse about was that she had pitied him. And she didn't tell him that, but she had felt pity for him. And that was such a not a good feeling. So when you feel pity, it's a feeling of, oh, I'm so glad that that's not me. Poor you. And there's a callousness in there, and there's a distance, there's a separateness. When we feel compassion, that's when we feel with our soul, where we can actually be there. I know that we are connected, and your pain is my pain. And although it's painful because we're taking on another person's pain in a sense, it actually feels better because we know that we have connected with somebody. And by doing that, the other person feels heard, they feel supported, and it actually creates healing. So the story that I refer to in my blog is when my dad was in the hospital and it wasn't going well. There were many callous and cold things that were going on in his care while he was there. And at this point, it had gotten to the point where it was pointless for him to be there. There was nothing positive that they were doing for him, and in fact, causing more pain and suffering. And we had decided that it was time for him to leave, and even the doctor had decided it was time for him to leave. So I had gone to eat for a few minutes and came back and wondered that we were waiting for a specialist to come and take a look at him and write orders to go back to rehab. He was in the rehab unit of a nursing home to, you know, write orders and directions for the staff. And so when I came back, I asked, you know, has the doctor been here? Because we want to get him out of here today. And the nurse said, I don't know. I saw him on the floor, but I don't know if he saw your dad. And I asked him, so can you find out so we can arrange for to have him leave? And he said, okay, I'll contact the doctor. And then he proceeded to sit down at his desk and start typing on the computer. So I waited. I thought maybe he was emailing him. And I came back and said, so were you emailing the doctor? And the nurse looked at me and said, no, I have other work. And I was kind of in shock. I said, but can you please do that? And he ignored me at that point. And I started saying to other people around at the nurse's station, imagine that that is your father. Just take a moment and imagine that's your father. And that actually, that triggered something in somebody sitting, one of the people at the desk, and she got up and at that point said, what can I do for you? And started to help me. And I think that was always, when I used to work in nursing homes, that was always the approach that I had with residents, that I would, you know, imagine what that would feel like if I was their daughter or their granddaughter. How would I want them to be treated? And I would talk to the staff in that way, like, let's do this for them because they need our compassion. And I understand when you work in an environment day in and day out and you see all kinds of problems. I mean, I hear all kinds of pain and suffering in my work, my job. You can't take it home with you, but you have to strike a balance between not taking it home with you, not carrying that pain with you home and becoming sick yourself, because then you're not
going to be much good with the people that you care for. And this is with caregivers as well, family caregivers. You taking on the pain and creating your own pain doesn't help them. But then there's the opposite at the other end of the spectrum where you don't feel their pain at all and you're very distant and clinical and you lose your humanity. And I think it's really, really important. Had that nurse responded and understanding, no matter how much work he had, to understand that this was really important, that this family was suffering, that this patient was suffering, and say, you know what, let me call the doctor and find out if he's been here so that you can get the ball rolling to get out of here, it would have prevented a lot of suffering. And we talked about science before when Josh was here, so I'm going to talk about this in a scientific way. There's actually been scientific research. There's a lot of research on this, on the effects of compassion on medical care and healing. And then there was an extensive scientific literature review conducted by the Center for Compassion and Altruism Research and Education at Stanford University. So they took all of the different scientific studies and they looked at the outcomes of the studies to see what similarities they found in the outcome. And what they found is that there was scientific evidence, a growing body of scientific evidence that indicates that kindness holds the power to heal and that it's often overlooked. And it, even though it's virtually cost-free, it's often overlooked, but it has a statistically significant, so scientifically powerful impact on our physical health. For example, positive effect of kindness is even greater than that of taking an aspirin to reduce the risk of a heart attack or the influence of smoking on male mortality. Kindness is more powerful than an aspirin to reduce the risk of a heart attack and more powerful than the influence of smoking on male mortality. They talk about males because that's who the research happened to be on. It's actually, I've always felt that, it's very important to be compassionate and kind when you're working with people with medical issues, and that wouldn't it be nice if the doctor had a good bedside manner? But now, this belief isn't just a nice notion. When we talked about this, feeling versus fact. Now, known scientific fact. There's evidence-based science to this, showing that when patients are treated with kindness, when there's an effort made to get to know them, to empathize with them, understand how they feel and what they're going through, to communicate with them rather than just speak in, one-word sentences, and to really, have a discussion with them and to listen to them and respond to their needs. These were the following outcomes that they found in their scientific studies. Faster healing of wounds, reduction of physical pain, reduction of anxiety, reduced blood pressure, and shorter hospital stays. And the research also shows that when doctors and nurses act compassionately, patients are more likely to be forthcoming in divulging their medical information, which that makes sense, right? You trust your doctor more when they're more compassionate, and this would lead to better diagnosing. Um, They are more likely to adhere. Patients are more likely to adhere to their prescribed treatments, which would lead to fewer readmissions. Well, that makes sense. If you can have a discussion with your doctor and you can talk about how, well, this medication you gave me these side effects, and the doctor really listens and says maybe this isn't the right medication, or let's lower the dose, or let's try, yes, that's a common side effect that goes away with time. When you can have that discussion, you're more likely to stick to the treatment. The review of the scientific research also found that patients aren't the only ones who see better results from KIND treatment. The nurses and the caregivers who provide the KIND treatment themselves benefit as well. And that's what I was saying before, that if you're distant and callous, you close off a part of yourself. You feel, even though it's painful to open up and actually feel another person's pain, it feels good when you can really hear them and connect with them and be there for them and help them. And the research shows that the doctors, the nurses, the caregivers benefited. A kinder work environment helped them to feel more engaged in their work and less exhausted, which is very important to caregivers. Especially, caregivers, whether that's family caregivers or paid caregivers. Paid caregivers usually work very long hours and very high pressure. They don't get paid much. But if they are kind to their first care receiver and they really feel that connection, then that gives them the reason. It gives them a purpose, a meaning to their life. And so, I think that's the point of what I wanted to write about in my experience, that it was the opposite of that. I ran into very little kindness and compassion. There were a few people, but most of the time it was that cold, callous, we're just doing this to get it done kind of attitude, and it caused a lot more suffering, and it could have been prevented. I didn't realize that, but in the Hippocratic Oath that doctors take, it says, "I will remember that warmth, sympathy, and understanding may outweigh the surgeon's knife or the chemist's drug." And that's very interesting. So I guess this is a plea to any healthcare providers who are out there to open up your hearts and to understand that as much as you want to be efficient in your time and taking care of your patients, it is efficient. It adds to the efficiency when you can be kind and compassionate and open your heart and actually feel with your soul what the other person is feeling, what the person that you're treating is feeling. And the outcome medically will be better, and the suffering, the emotional suffering by that patient and by their family can be ameliorated. There's a lot of power in kindness. So on that note, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, Laura Gelazunis will be joining us from Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, to talk about what's happening with the retirees. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Shows a man where to fish. Watch me send it. He lies in his habit. Teacher's told us how to live, and he knows how to live. Hear the thunder high in that mountain. Watch the clouds rolling in. Senoritas, they dance on that shoreline, making plans for that kiss. And they know how to kiss. They say that we're 1 hour behind. But the senoritas, they keep us in time. That poppy CT just blows through my mind. It takes me back to my place, Punta Mita time. Senoritas, they keep me in time. That poppy CT just blows my mind. And it takes me back to that place, Punta Mita time. Lightning striking the water makes the porpoises fly. Big belugas become ballerinas with a show just to see, and they call out to me. They say that we're 1 hour behind, but the senoritas, they keep us in time. Hey! That poppy CT just flows through our minds. And it takes us back to that place. They say that we're 1 hour behind. But the senoritas, they keep us in time. That poppy CT just flows through my mind. And it takes me back to my place, Punta Mita time.
please visit us on the web at www.drmaricarpell.com.
All right. Well, I think you want some music art? And we are back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Carpell and Your Golden Years right here on Blog Talk Radio and on drmaracarpell.com. And we skipped over Laura Gelasunas because of the time change and there was confusion there. She's in Mexico and their time didn't change while ours did. So she'll be on again soon. But we went right to Ernick and we were just listening to the music of Brandon Taylor, who joins us now on the phone. Welcome, Brandon.
Howdy, Doc. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I just want to let you know there's a slight delay when we talk like this. So we don't.
Okie doke.
Just kind of. So where are you? I heard that you travel quite a bit for your music. Are you on the road?
Yeah, either way, either I travel for the music or I'm chasing after it. I'm not sure. I'm in Oxford, Mississippi right now. I hitched down here a day ago with a friend of mine who had a gig, and I've got a gig here later this next week and with an old friend of mine, and so we're just kind of picking some tunes and get tightened up. Well, he has time off work, so I'm just enjoying myself.
Oh, great. All right.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about your music?
My musical history, well, I mean, I've always liked music. I've always felt that it was kind of something that I can connect more with than other things. Nobody in my family is really musical. So, I mean, I got my first taste, I guess, off like oldies radio, you know, hearing the Beatles first time that really perked up my ears. I started gigging out at bars and stuff when I was going to school in Oxford, Mississippi, here where I'm at now, actually, and just, you know, got the rare benefit of being around a host of good songwriters that were in town at the time, and just kind of mm-hmm. soaked all that up and saw what they were doing and just kind of emulated it.
Okay. So you travel around. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that. Where do you travel to play?
Basically anywhere that I want to go. I mean, it's easier to go back somewhere you've already been as far as establishing contacts with venues and et cetera. But I've toured quite a bit through Texas here recently, and went through Arizona, Cottonwood and Jerome and Flagstaff, and then up in Colorado and Denver and over in the mountains in Vail and Edwards. And so I guess I just start with the places that I have some kind of frame of reference, a contact or something like that. And then, you know, every time you go, you meet more people. And the way I travel, especially, you're really putting yourself out there to the universe. I surf on couches and hitchhike and use public transit. You know, you can't really isolate yourself when you travel that way. And just by way of meeting people, everything materializes and hopefully keeps you going on to the next town.
Right. That's how you met Art Mendoza, the producer of this show, right?
Oh, man. Yeah, it was a hoot, man. I was definitely needing a ride when he picked me up.
Art's a good
guy.
That's wild. So you hitch all around the country to your musical gigs.
Yeah, you know, I can't really financially do it otherwise, and you know, my vehicle's kind of out of commission right now, and you know, it's hard to. I play with a band around Memphis where I'm from, and it's just hard to make the money right, and obviously, not everybody is willing to travel in the fashion that I do, so I just got tired of sitting around and waiting for gigs and just started kind of reaching out there. And that's another thing I love about Art, you know, when he sends you an email, it says at the bottom, the universe rewards action, you know, which I think is very true.
Right. Just sitting and thinking about it is not going to come to you.
No, you know, and even like, no matter what your religion or whatever, you know, I still have a little bit of a problem with people that just pray and there's no action. You know, there's one thing to like put a hope or a desire out to the universe, but you kind of back up what you're putting out by your actions. You know,
mm-hmm.
It really takes some impetus from yourself.
So Brandon, do you have any CDs out? Have you made any recordings?
Yeah, I've got, so you just played, I believe, Baby Blue. That's
mm-hmm.
on my record Radio Ghost that I put out in December of 2016. I recorded that in Memphis with Boo Mitchell engineering and producing at Royal Studios with a host of talented folks, a few of which were the very folks playing on the stages in Oxford, Mississippi when I was in the crowd, you know, looking at them. So it was a fun experience, but also like a kind of surreal, you know.
Yeah, I bet. So can you tell us about that song, Baby Blue?
Yeah, so it's about my truck that is unfortunately out of commission. The wheels haven't fallen off, but definitely not in the, you know, gone to the junkyard yet. Yeah, so that's about my 89 Nissan little pickup truck, and I got it from my grandfather when he passed, and so I just kind of wrote that song. You know, the Radio Ghost, the record, the idea is that every song is a bit of a different genre, although that was kind of a slow groove rock and roll. It was supposed to be the rock and roll song, and so it's like, well, cars are really rock and roll, you know, Chuck Berry sings about cars. And I really love this truck.
Right?
Yeah, it's just a fun song that I wrote about my good old Baby Blue.
So So, Brandon, we're going to play another one of the songs that you sent us, Audrey Hepburn. Can you tell us about that before we play it?
Sure. So I have a friend of mine, and he's like, there's two kinds of guys. You know, you're a Marilyn Monroe guy or an Audrey Hepburn guy. And, I mean, that's pretty narrowing people down into two categories. But if that were true, I'm definitely an Audrey Hepburn type of guy. And I've just always loved all of the films she's in, and just there's a certain grace about her. You know, she's a Hollywood starlet that's captured my heart. And so I just wrote a song about that. You know, sometimes your muse is the girl you know, and sometimes it's just somebody that you see on the silver screen. So
yeah, that's cool. Yeah,
what
that's great,
song's
actually.
About. And fairly accurate to her life as well. In World War II, up in Holland, you know, she moved there trying to get to a neutral place, and then Holland got sucked into it. So she dang near starved to death. And there's some interesting tidbits outside of the, you know, starry-eyed words that I have about Audrey Hepburn.
Right. Okay. Well, hang on the line, because we'll talk a little bit more after we play it, okay?
Sure.
All right, Audrey Hepburn. All right, Brandon Taylor, Audrey Hepburn. So,
thanks.
I really like that.
Well, cheers.
What's that?
I said, well, cheers. Thank you.
Yeah. So Brandon, if people are interested in catching you along the road and seeing you perform, anything coming up that you know of that where they can go look for you?
Yeah, you know, so I'll be in Oxford here on Sunday, next Sunday. at Thacker 564. It's a restaurant that me and this old friend have a gig at. And then otherwise, I mean, all my gigs are on the internet. I have a website. It's BrandonTaylorRadio.com. And then my Instagram is kind of like, I guess, a bit of a blog. I've kind of tried to shy away from Facebook and just stick with some kind of artful post about my travels and, you know, where I'm playing. And so I'll usually post there as well. But the website has an updated list. So as soon as
Brandon,
I book a gig, I'll update it.
BrandonTaylorRadio.com.
Yeah, BrandonTaylorRadio.com. Yep, people can keep up with me, and I'm around Memphis for this next month, and then I'm hitting the road again at the beginning of April to go through Arizona and Colorado, and so I'll be getting out farther west.
Great.
For those listeners out there.
And if people are interested in purchasing your music in a CD or downloading, can they do that at your website?
Yeah, they can do that at the website. There's a iTunes link, you know, so I'm on all the digital outlets. And if you're in Memphis, you should stop by Shangri-La Records on Madison Avenue. It's my favorite local record shop, and they've got some CDs of mine for sale there. Always good to support local business if you can.
Yeah. All right, great. So I'm going to post those links. Well, that link, Brandon Taylor Radio, on my web post about this program later this evening. So if people didn't have their pen and paper ready, they could just go there later and click on it.
Well, good
okay.
deal. Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love to connect everybody.
So you sent us a third song, and we're going to play that after I let everybody know what's happening next week before we go off the air. But before you and I stop talking, why don't you tell us about that song? It's Poor Man's Blues.
Poor Man's Blues. So, you know, every song's a different genre, kind of theme for the record. That would be Surprise, the blues song. And I guess at that point, you know, I've never been like too set financially. I've got, you know, some kind of support or whatever, so I'm definitely not trying to feign, you know, being an old blues man. But I guess it's just talking about, you know, the tag in it is you got to pay your dues if you want to sing the blues. And I remember having a discussion with a friend of mine, Will Sexton, right after that song's recorded. He's an older seasoned musician. He's like, you can't just write, you know, that stuff. You know, you got to go live it. I'm like, well, I'm writing it empathetically, you know. But in any case, it might have been just like an omen for myself, because I definitely feel like over the past 2 or 3 years since the recording of that song, I've been paying my dues one way or the other.
And
okay. Kind of understand my own words better, if that makes any
right.
sense. So, yeah, it's
okay.
just a song about struggle. Blues is a state
okay.
of mind.
Well, we're going to play that, as I said, as we go off the air this evening. But I want to thank you again for being on the program, and safe traveling, and good luck with all of your gigs and your CD.
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate you so much for having me on your program, and give my warmest regards to Art. I'll be rambling back through Texas in June, so I hope to maybe he'll see my thumb out on the side of the road.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll get to hear you play here in Austin.
Oh, definitely. I've already got at least 5 or 6 gigs booked around Austin for June, so I'll be rambling probably farther and wider than I have yet in Texas, so I'm ready.
Great. Well, let us know where you'll be so we can come out and hear you.
Good deal. Well, thank you so much, Doc.
All right. Well, you have a good evening.
You too.
All right. Thanks.
See ya.
All right. So we've come to the end of another program. Before we play the last song, I just want to let you all know what's happening next week. Next Sunday, March 18th, we'll be back here in the studio with motivational speaker, founder of
Crimson Woman Leadership Consulting artist and author, Felora Irakshani. And she joins us in the studio to talk about her latest book, The Code, How to Unlock Your Inner Genius for a Life of Equanimity. And if you want to hear tonight's program again and read the information from this show, get the links to any websites that my guest talked about on the show and learn about upcoming shows, listen to previous programs, read my blog, get meditation, download the free download, etc., watch videos, go to my website, drmarakarpel.com, drmarakarpel.com, and also be sure to follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mara Karpel, Your Golden Years, and also The Passionate Life by Dr. Mara Karpel. And you can listen to this evening's program in as soon as 5 minutes from now by going directly to Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/Your Golden Years. This program was produced by Accomplice Entertainment, Postal Productions, and Psyched Up Productions, and sponsored by neurologist and memory specialist Dr. Ronald DeVere and by Storyhouse. And special thanks to my guests, Josh Beach and Brandon Taylor. And of course, thank you to Art. Thank you all for listening. Have a peaceful night and inspiring week. And remember, no age. Good night, everyone. And here's Brandon Taylor once again.
Guidance offered by Dr. Karpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Karpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show.